In a logo, ribbons of film ring a roaring male lion. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, trademark. Blue titles appear. Act 3 Communications presents. The Princess Bride. A star is nestled in the letter C. A baseball video game fades in on a TV screen. Rendered in 8-bit graphics, a pitcher throws the ball and the batter smacks it. As he runs for first, we see a young boy in a Chicago Bears jersey working the joystick controller from his bed. A woman pokes her head into his cluttered room.
Hi, honey.
Hi, Mom.
She kisses him on the forehead, then feels it with her palm.
You feeling any better?
A little bit.
Guess what?
What?
Your grandfather's here.
Mom, can't you tell me I'm sick?
You're sick? That's why he's here.
He'll pinch my cheek. I hate that.
Maybe he won't.
Hey, how's the sick? Huh?
Making an entrance, the old man pinches his grandson's cheek.
I think I'll leave you two pals alone.
I brought you a special present.
What is it?
Open it up.
The kid eagerly unwraps his small rectangular gift, then frowns in disappointment.
A book?
That's right. When I was your age, television was called books. And this is a special book. It was the book my father used to read to me when I was sick, and I used to read it to your father. And today, I'm going to read it to you.
Has it got any sports in it?
Are you kidding? Fencing, fighting, torture, revenge, giants, monsters, chases, escapes, true love, miracles.
Doesn't sound too bad. I'll try and stay awake.
The boy shuts off the TV. Oh,
thank you very much. Very nicely. Your vote of confidence is overwhelming. All right.
He reads.
The Prince's Bride.
He wets his thumb and flips pages.
By S. Morgenstern, Chapter 1. Buttercup was raised on a small farm in the country of Florin. Her favorite pastimes were riding her horse and tormenting the farm boy that worked there. His name was Wesley, but she never called him that. Isn't that a wonderful beginning?
Yeah, it's really good.
Nothing gave Buttercup as much pleasure as ordering Wesley around.
Farm boy, polish my horse's saddle. I want to see my face shining in it by morning.
As you wish.
Wesley gazes after the golden-haired Buttercup as she flounces off.
As you wish was all he ever said to her.
Now, as he chops wood, she approaches with two buckets.
Farm boy, fill these with water. Please.
As you wish.
He stares at her adoringly, his wild blonde locks framing his blue eyes and boyish, clean-shaven face.
That day, she was amazed to discover that when he was saying, as you wish, what he meant was, I love you.
Later, she needs dough in a kitchen.
And even more amazing was the day she realized she truly loved him back.
Wesley drops off some firewood.
Farm boy.
On his way out, he pauses in the doorway and looks back at her. Buttercup glances upward.
Fetch me that pitcher.
It hangs right above her head, easily within reach. His face smudged with dirt, Wesley steps in close to her. Buttercup leans back slightly, but stands her ground. They gaze into each other's eyes as Wesley takes down the clay pitcher and hands it to her.
As you wish.
She beams. Later, outside, the silhouettes of Wesley and Buttercup stand together in the red glow of dusk. Their lips join in a kiss, eclipsing the setting sun.
Hold it, hold it. What is this? Are you trying to trick me? Where's the sports? Is this a kissing book?
Wait, just wait.
When's it get good?
Keep your shirt on. Let me read. Wesley had no money for marriage, so he packed his few belongings and left the farm to seek his fortune across the sea. It was a very emotional time for Buttercup.
I don't believe this.
I fear I'll never see you again.
Of course you will.
But what if something happens to you?
Finishing an embrace, Wesley gives Buttercup a solemn look.
Hear this now. I will always come for you.
But how can you be sure?
This is true love. think this happens every day?
Her sad blue eyes study his handsome face as he strokes her cheek with his thumb. He gives her a boyish smile. On the verge of tears, she smiles back at him and kisses him and hugs him tightly.
Wesley didn't reach his destination. His ship was attacked by the dread pirate Roberts, who never left captives alive. When Buttercup got the news that Wesley was murdered...
Murdered by pirates is good.
She went into her room and shut the door. And for days, she neither slept nor ate.
I will never love again.
Now, sheep charge across a footbridge to a kingdom. Townspeople gather in a castle courtyard.
5 years later, the main square of Florence City was filled as never before to hear the announcement of the great Prince Humperdinck's bride-to-be.
A man in royal robes steps out on a balcony, joining an old couple wearing crowns and a man with a Van Dyke beard.
My people, a month from now, our country will have its 500th anniversary. On that sundown, I shall marry a lady who was once a commoner like yourselves. But perhaps you will not find her common now. Would you like to meet her?
Yes!
My people, the Princess Buttercup!
The crowd turns to an archway where a figure stands silhouetted in gauzy light. Buttercup steps forth, walking a red carpet lined with flowers. As she passes before them, resplendent in her satiny gown, the villagers go to their knees. Others follow suit in a great wave of motion. The Princess Bride gazes out upon the kneeling crowd.
Buttercup's emptiness consumed her. Although the law of the land gave Humperdinck the right to choose his bride, she did not love him.
Later, outside the castle walls, she rides a galloping horse along a stream.
Despite Humperdinck's reassurance that she would grow to love him, the only joy she found was in a daily ride.
She crosses an arched stone bridge and barrels across an open meadow toward distant woodlands. Now, shaded by a canopy of evenly spaced trees, she reins in her horse on a carpet of dried leaves.
A word, my lady?
Three men stand in her path.
We are but poor, lost circus performers. Is there a village nearby?
There is nothing nearby, not for miles.
Then there will be no one to hear you scream.
A giant reaches for her neck. She falls unconscious. Now the short gang leader rips fabric from a garment and tucks it in her horse's saddle.
What is that you're ripping?
It's fabric from the uniform of an army officer of Gilder.
Who is Gilder?
The country across the sea, the sworn enemy of Florin. Go!
The horse takes off.
Once the horse reaches the castle, the fabric will make the prince suspect the Gilderians have abducted his love. When he finds her body dead on the Gilder frontier, his suspicions will be totally confirmed.
You never say anything about killing anyone.
I've hired you to help me start a war. It's a prestigious line of work with a long and glorious tradition.
I just don't think it's right, killing an innocent girl.
Am I going mad? Or did the word think escape your lips? You are not hired for your brains, you hippopotamic landmass!
I agree with Fezzik.
Oh, the Sot has spoken! What happens to her is not truly your concern. I will kill her. And remember this. Never forget this! When I found you, you were so slobbering drunk, you couldn't buy brandy! And you! Friendless, brainless, helpless, hopeless! Do you want me to send you back to where you were? Unemployed in Greenland!
Fezzik the giant sulks as his diminutive boss storms off across their moored ship. The former drunk moves close to his 7-foot-tall crewmate, who sullenly cranks the spoked handles of a windlass.
At Vicini, he can fuss.
Fuss, fuss. Think he like to scream at us?
Probably he means no harm.
He's really very short on charm.
You have a great gift for Ryan.
Yes, yes. Some of the time.
Enough of that!
Fezzik, are there rocks ahead?
If they are, we all be dead.
No more rhymes now, I mean it!
Anybody want a peanut?
Yeah!
As the boat sails off, the picture dissolves to nighttime. The ship travels through dark, moonlit waters with the former drunkard at the helm.
We'll reach the cliffs by dawn.
The helmsman glances back.
Why are you doing that?
Making sure nobody's follow us.
That would be inconceivable.
Despite what you think, you will be caught. And when you are, the prince will see you all hanged.
Of all the necks on this boat, Highness, the one you should be worrying about is your own.
Wearing a sword at his hip, the bushy-haired, mustached helmsman stares back again.
Stop doing that! We can all relax, it's almost over.
You're sure nobody's follow us?
As I told you, it would be absolutely, totally, and in all other ways, inconceivable. No one in Gilder knows what we've done, and no one in Florin could have gotten here so fast. Out of curiosity, why do you ask?
No reason. Suddenly, I just happened to look behind us and something is there.
What?
Vizzini hurries to the helm while Fezzik peers over the side of the boat. They view a tiny ship barely perceptible on the horizon.
Probably some local fishermen out for a pleasure cruise at night through eel-infested waters.
Buttercup swims away.
Go in! Get after her!
I don't swim.
I only duck paddle.
Veer left! Left! Left!
The princess stops and treads water as she looks around.
Do you know what that sound is, Highness? Those are the shrieking eels. If you don't believe me, just wait. They always grow louder when they're about to feed on human flesh.
A creature larger than an anaconda slithers past her.
If you swim back now, I promise no harm will come to you. I doubt you'll get such an offer from the eel.
A head breaks the surface, snapping together its rows of sharp teeth. Circling back around, the eel charges at Buttercup and opens wide.
She doesn't get eaten by the eels at this time.
What?
The eel doesn't get her. I'm explaining to you because you look nervous.
I wasn't nervous. Well, maybe I was a little bit concerned, but that's not the same thing.
Because we can stop now if you want.
No, you could read a little bit more if you want.
His grandfather continues reading.
Do you know what that sound is, Highness? Those are the shrieking eels.
Well, pass that, Grandpa. You read it already.
Oh, my goodness, I did. I'm sorry. Beg your pardon.
All right. Let's see. She was in the water. The eel was coming after her. She was frightened. The eel started to charge her, and then...
A giant arm pounces the jaws shut, then grabs Buttercup.
Put her down! Just put her down!
Fezzik deposits her on the deck. The helmsman glances back at the other ship.
I think he's getting closer.
He's no concern of ours. Sail on! I suppose you think you're brave, don't you?
Only compared to some.
As the dripping wet princess stares down Vizzini, the image dissolves to the two boats sailing at dawn.
Look! He's right on top of us! Wonder if he's using the same wind we are using.
Whoever he is, he's too late! See?
He points to a mountainous wall of rock.
The cliffs of insanity! Hurry up! Move the thing! And that other thing!
He screams in the helmsman's face.
Move it!
Their ship navigates a channel between two cliffs, leaving the other craft behind.
We're safe! Only Fezzik is strong enough to go up our way. He'll have to sail around for hours till he finds a harbor.
The four disembark onto a small, rocky ledge. The bushy, mustached swordsman helps Fezzik put on a leather harness, then seats Buttercup on one of its looped straps. She peers up along a thick, dangling rope which leads all the way to the top of the cliffs. As Fezzik starts to ascend, she fearfully squeezes her eyes shut. Climbing hand over hand, the giant carries all three of his companions as the other boat sails into the channel. From the treacherously steep cliffs, we watch the group continue its swift ascent. A lone figure in black pilots the sailboat to the ledge. Fezzik climbs on to deadly heights among the moss-covered rocks. As the man in black leaps out to the ledge and sets after them, the mustached swordsman looks down.
He's climbing the rope. And he's gaining on us.
Inconceivable.
Their pursuer surges up the rope.
Faster!
I thought I was going faster.
You were supposed to be, this Colossus. You were this great legendary thing, and yet he gains.
Well, I'm killing three people, and he got only himself.
I do not accept excuses. I'm just going to have to find myself a new giant, that's all.
Don't say that, Vincini, please.
Our distant view descends from Fezzik's group to the man in black quickly closing the gap.
Did I make it clear that your job is at stake?
The mysterious stranger pumps his legs as if pedaling a bicycle while his arms propel him along. Fezzik makes it almost to the top of the cliff where some stone ruins lie a short distance away. The mustached swordsman clambers off of the giant. Meanwhile, the man in black makes steady progress past the varied strata of rock. The swordsman pulls Buttercup to the top of the cliff and sets her aside. She crumbles in a timid heap, hugging a stone step for dear life. The swordsman helps Vizini up next. The diminutive mastermind takes out a dagger and begins to cut the rope, which is coiled around a great rock. An outer layer frays loose. Meanwhile, the man in black continues unabated. As Vizini's dagger cuts through the last of the rope, it rapidly whisks across the ground and disappears over the cliff's edge. Fezzik and the swordsman take a look down and find the masked man in black hugging the jagged rocks from a small ledge about 50 feet below.
You got very good arms.
Vizini quickly joins them.
He didn't fall? Inconceivable!
You keep using the word. I do not think it means what you think it means.
They look down again at the cliffs.
My God, he's climbing.
Whoever he is, he's obviously seen us with the princess and must therefore die. You carry her. We'll head straight for the Gilder Frontier. Catch up when he's dead. If he falls, fine. If not, the sword.
I'm going to duel him left-handed.
You know what a hurry we're in!
That's the only way I can be satisfied. If I use my right, over too quickly.
I'll have it your way.
Vizini starts off as the swordsman watches the man in black search for handholds. Fezzik pats his friend on the shoulder.
You be careful. People in masks cannot be trusted.
I'm waiting!
The giant leads Buttercup after Vizini. As they depart, the swordsman paces, shaking his hands loose. He practices a couple fencing moves without his weapon, then looks back down over the cliff's edge.
Hello there!
The man in black dryly glances up at the swordsman, who waves.
Slow going! Look, I don't mean to be rude, but this is not as easy as it looks, so I'd appreciate it if you wouldn't distract me.
Sorry.
Thank you.
The impatient Spaniard steps away, draws his sword, and practices a thrust and parry combo with his left hand. Resheathing the blade, he peers over the edge again.
I do not suppose you could speed things up.
If you're in such a hurry, you could lower a rope or a tree branch or find something useful to do.
I could do that.
I have got some rope up here, but I do not think it would accept my help, since I am only waiting around to kill you. That does put a damper on our relationship.
But I promise I will not kill you until you reach the top.
That's very comforting, but I'm afraid you'll just have to wait.
I hate waiting.
I could give you my word as a Spaniard.
No good. I've known too many Spaniards.
Is there any way you'll trust me?
Nothing comes to mind.
I swear on the soul of my father, Domingo Montoya, you will reach the top alive.
Throw me the robe.
The swordsman dashes off in the early morning light. At the great rock, he uncoils a length of rope. The man in black waits from his precarious perch while the sea twinkles in the hazy distance below. The swordsman hurries back to the cliff's edge and throws down the rope. Its frayed end just barely reaches the man in black. Grabbing hold, he walks his way up the rocks as the swordsman reels him in. At the top, the Spaniard helps him safely to his feet.
Thank you.
He pulls his sword.
Well, wait until you're ready.
Again, thank you.
The man in black hobbles to a boulder, takes a seat, and tugs off one of his knee-high leather boots. Holding it upside down in his gloved hands, he shakes out several large pebbles. The dark-haired swordsman stares at the masked man with a blonde pencil mustache.
I do not mean to pry, but you don't by any chance happen to have six fingers on your right hand?
Do you always begin conversations this way?
My father was slaughtered by a six-fingered man.
The mysterious stranger holds up his right hand, offering a clear view of his five fingers.
Was a great swordmaker, my father. When the six-fingered man appeared and requests a special sword, my father took the job.
The Spaniard draws his sword.
He slept a year before he was done.
He offers it up. The man in black takes it and turns it in his grip, admiring its slender steel blade and intricately wrought basket hilt of gold and tiny jewels.
I've never seen its equal.
He returns it to the swordsman.
Six-fingered man returned and demanded it, but at 1/10 his promised price. My father refused. Without a word, the six-fingered man slashed him through the heart. I love my father, so naturally I challenged his murderer to a duel. I failed. Six-fingered man left me alive, but he gave me this.
He points to a 2-inch scar lining each cheek.
How old were you?
I was 11 years old. When I was strong enough, I dedicated my life to the study of fencing. So the next time we meet, I will not fail. I will go up to the six-fingered man and say, "Hello, my name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father. Prepare to die."
You've done nothing but study swordplay.
More pursuit than a study lately. You see, I cannot find him. It's been 20 years now. I'm starting to lose confidence. I just work for Ficina to pay the bills. It's not a lot of money in revenge.
The man in black pushes himself to his feet.
Well, I certainly hope you find him someday.
You're ready then?
Whether I am or not, you've been more than fair.
You seem a decent fellow. I hate to kill you.
You seem a decent fellow. I hate to die.
Begin.
Standing a good distance apart, they square off. Inigo makes the first feint. The man in black easily parries, then leans slightly out of the way of a swipe toward his head. The two circle each other warily. The man in black counters with the same slashing feint, which Inigo expertly deflects. With a smile, the Spaniard begins the duel in full force. Their swords cross again and again. The man in black ducks a swipe at his masked head. He smirks as Inigo presses him backwards.
You're using Bonetti's defense against me, huh?
I thought it fitting, considering the rocky terrain.
Naturally. You must expect me to attack with Capoferro.
Naturally. But I find that Tybalt cancels out Capoferro. Don't you?
He jumps down from a ruin.
Unless the enemy has a study, he's a gripper.
Inigo somersaults over his head.
Which I have.
With balletic grace, the man in black forces him back across the sandy, sloped terrain.
You are wonderful.
Thank you. I've worked hard to become so.
I admit it, you are better than I am.
Then why are you smiling?
Because I know something you don't know.
And what is that?
I am not left-handed.
Without missing a beat, he switches the sword to his right hand. He drives his adversary up the stone steps to a turret-shaped plateau, then shoulders him into a crumbling brick parapet, trapping him.
You're amazing.
I ought to be after 20 years.
Oh, there's something I ought to tell you.
Tell me. I'm not left-handed either.
He shoves Inigo back and tosses his sword to his right hand with a flourish. As the two trade lunges and parries, the Spaniard's weapon flies from his grasp. From the stairs, he leaps onto a moss-covered bar spanning an archway, swings out, and staggers across the sand to his weapon. The man in black casually flings his own sword into a patch of grass. Jumping to the bar, he completely swings himself around it, dismounts, and sticks a perfect landing.
Who are you?
No one of consequence.
I must know.
Get used to disappointment.
Hey.
Inigo slashes forward, but the man in black blocks every strike and puts him back on the defensive. Getting turned around, the Spaniard parries an attack between his legs, then scrambles up atop the ruins. The man in black knocks his opponent's sword high into the air. Inigo vaults onto a stone step and catches it. The duel resumes, each man briefly gaining the upper hand. Inigo sword fights behind his back as they trade positions, while his masked opponent smoothly moves his rapier from one hand to the other and back again. Clutching his sword with both hands, the Spaniard swings wildly and desperately. The man in black nicks his face, then disarms him a third time. Beaten, Inigo gets down on his knees.
Kill me quickly.
I would as soon destroy a stained glass window as an artist like yourself. However, since I can't have you following me either.
He pummels his opponent unconscious with the hilt of his sword.
Please understand, I hold you in the highest respect.
He runs over to his scabbard, picks it up, and takes off through the ruins. A view from across a grassy mountain valley shows his tiny black form racing down a hillside. Watching, Bazzini scowls.
Inconceivable!
Give her to me! Catch up with us quickly!
What did I do?
Finish him. Finish him! Your way!
Oh, good. My way. Thank you, Vanzini. Which was my way?
Pick up one of those rocks. Get behind the boulder. In a few minutes, the man in black will come running around the bend. The minute his head is in view, hit it with the rock!
My way is not a sportsmanlike.
As his boss proceeds with the princess up the hill, Fezzik grabs a stone the size of a normal human head and plods behind a boulder. The image dissolves to the man in black racing up from around a bend. His pace slows to a stop as he peers around warily at a large rock formation. As he starts forward again, a stone flies right past him and shatters on a boulder. Fezzik steps into view and picks up another rock.
I did that on purpose. I don't have to miss.
I believe you. So what happens now?
We face each other as God intended. Sportsmanlike. No tricks, no weapons. Skill against skill alone.
You mean you'll put down your rock and I'll put down my sword and we'll try and kill each other like civilized people?
I can kill you now.
Fezzik brandishes the rock.
I think the odds are slightly in your favor at hand fighting.
It's not my fault being the biggest and the strongest. I don't even exercise.
He tosses the stone aside, then squares off with the man in black, towering over his masked opponent. The mysterious swashbuckler barrels into Fezzik's chest, but the giant barely budges an inch. The man in black next tries squeezing him in a bear hug. Fezzik just stands there, watching his opponent strain with all his might.
Look, are you just fiddling around with me or what?
I just want you to feel you're doing well. I hate for people to die on behalf.
The man in black dodges between his legs.
You're quick.
And a good thing, too.
Were you wearing a mask? Were you burned by acid or something like that?
Oh, no, it's just they're terribly comfortable. I think everyone will be wearing them in the future.
He ducks three powerful punches, then jumps on Fezzik's back and gets him in a chokehold.
I just figured when you give me so much trouble.
The giant thrusts backwards into a boulder.
Why is that, do you think?
Well, I haven't fought just one person for so long.
The man in black maintains his chokehold.
Been specializing in groups, battling gangs for local charities, that kind of thing.
Fezzik slams him into another boulder.
Why should that make such a difference?
When, you see, you use different moves when you're fighting half a dozen people, then we only have to be one.
He finally passes out face down from the chokehold. With great effort, the man in black rolls him onto his back. He puts his ear to the giant's chest for a moment, then looks into his peaceful face.
I do not envy you the headache you will have when you awake. But in the meantime, rest well and dream of large women.
He hurries to his sword, nimbly scoops it off the ground with his foot, and dashes up the grassy mountain slope. Meanwhile, a man's suede boots carefully step inside footprints in the sand, skip forward, then retreat. Prince Humperdinck is mimicking the fencer's movements at the top of the cliffs.
There was a mighty duel.
His advisor with a Van Dyke beard watches with a company of horsemen.
Ranged all over. They were both masters.
Who won? How did it end?
The loser ran off alone. The winner followed those footprints toward Gilda.
Shall we track them both?
The loser is nothing. Only the princess matters.
Clearly, this was all planned by warriors of Gilda. We must all be ready for whatever lies ahead.
Could this be a trap?
I always think everything could be a trap, which is why I'm still alive.
He rides off on his horse. Now, the man in black crests a grassy hill. A short distance ahead, Buttercup sits blindfolded beside Vizzini, who holds a knife to her throat.
So, it is down to you, and it is down to me.
A picnic is laid out before them. The man in black approaches.
If you wish you're dead, by all means, keep moving forward.
Let me explain.
There's nothing to explain. You're trying to kidnap what I've rightfully stolen.
Perhaps An arrangement can be reached?
There will be no arrangement, and you're killing her.
Buttercup winces from the blade at her throat. The man in black stops.
But if there can be no arrangement, then we are at an impasse.
I'm afraid so. I can't compete with you physically, and you're no match for my brains.
You're that smart.
Let me put it this way. Have you ever heard of Plato, Aristotle, Socrates?
Yes.
Morons.
Really? In that case, I challenge you to a battle of wits.
For the princess?
The stranger nods.
To the death?
He nods again.
I accept.
Good. Then pour the wine.
With a tablecloth draped over a rock serving as a table, Vizzini fills two goblets from a bottle. The man in black sits across from him and pulls a small tube from the folds of his clothing. He removes a stopper from it, then hands it to Vizzini.
Inhale this, but do not touch.
I smell nothing.
What you do not smell is called iocane powder. It is odorless, tasteless, dissolves instantly in liquid, and is among the more deadly poisons known to man.
The bald, diminutive kidnapper watches curiously as the man in black takes the goblets and turns his back to him. Facing Vizzini again, the masked man pretends to switch the cups back and forth in a little shell game maneuver, then puts one in front of his smirking foe and the other in front of himself.
All right. Where is the poison? The battle of wits has begun. It ends when you decide and we both drink and find out who is right and who is dead.
But it's so simple. All I have to do is divine from what I know of you. Are you the sort of man who would put the poison into his own goblet or his enemy's? Now, a clever man would put the poison into his own goblet because he would know that only a great fool would reach for what he was given. I'm not a great fool, so I can clearly not choose the wine in front of you. But you must have known I was not a great fool. You would have counted on it, so I can clearly not choose the wine in front of me.
You've made your decision then?
Not remotely. Because iocane comes from Australia, as everyone knows. And Australia is entirely peopled with criminals. And criminals are used to having people not trust them, as you are not trusted by me, so I can clearly not choose the wine in front of you.
Truly, you have a dizzying intellect.
Wait till I get going! Where was I?
Australia.
Yes, Australia. And you must have suspected I would have known the powder's origin, so I can clearly not choose the wine in front of me.
You're just stalling now.
You'd like to think that, wouldn't you? You've beaten my giant, which means you're exceptionally strong. So you could have put the poison in your own goblet, trusting on your strength to save you. So I can clearly not choose the wine in front of you. But you've also bested my Spaniard, which means you must have studied. And in studying, you must have learned that man is mortal. So you would have put the poison as far from yourself as possible. So I can clearly not choose the wine in front of me.
You're trying to trick me into giving away something. It won't work.
It has worked! You've given everything away! I know where the poison is!
Then make your choice.
I will! And I choose... What in the world can that be?
What?
With where? His foe distracted, Vizzini switches the goblets.
I don't see anything.
Oh, well, I could have sworn I saw something. No matter.
What's so funny?
I'll tell you in a minute. First, let's drink. Me from my glass, and you from yours.
They each pick up the cup sitting before them. With a turtle-like smile, Vizzini toasts his enemy, then hesitates. He watches the man in black drink first before confidently guzzling down his own wine.
You guessed wrong.
You only think I guessed wrong! That's what's so funny! I switched glasses when your back was turned! Ha ha, you fool! You fell victim to one of the classic blunders! The most famous is never get involved in a land war in Asia, but only slightly less well known is this. Never go in against a Sicilian when death is on the line.
His foe calmly smirks. Vizzini falls over dead. The man in black steps around the rock and takes the blindfold off Buttercup. She frowns at him warily.
Who are you?
I'm no one to be trifled with. That is all you ever need know.
He cuts her bindings.
To think, all that time it was your cup that was poisoned.
They were both poisoned.
He pulls her to her feet.
I spent the last few years building up an immunity to iocane powder.
Meanwhile, the prince inspects the rocky mountain slope.
Someone has beaten a giant.
It will
will be great suffering in Gilda if she dies.
In his flowing purple tunic, he leaps astride his horse and charges off with his men. Elsewhere, the man in black hurriedly drags Buttercup across a plateau dotted with boulders that lie half embedded in the mossy terrain. He shoves her to a rock.
Catch your breath.
If you'll release me, whatever you ask for ransom, you'll get it, I promise you.
And what is that worth? The promise of a woman. You're very funny, Highness.
I was giving you a chance. It does not matter where you take me. There is no greater hunter than Prince Humperdinck. He can track a falcon on a cloudy day. He can find you.
You think your dearest love will save you?
I never said he was my dearest love. And yes, he will save me. That I know.
You admit to me you do not love your fiancé.
He knows I do not love him.
Are not capable of love is what you mean.
She stands up and faces him squarely.
I have loved more deeply than a killer like yourself could ever dream.
He moves to strike her. She flinches, awaiting his blow.
That was a warning, Highness. The next time my hand flies on its own, for where I come from, there are penalties when a woman lies.
Now the prince sniffs the empty poison tube, then turns to his advisor, who sits mounted on his horse.
Iocane, I bet my life on it. And there are the princess's footprints. She is alive, or was an hour ago. If she is otherwise, when I find her, I shall be very put out.
He and his men charge off. Now the man in black releases the exhausted princess at the edge of a ravine.
Rest, Highness.
I know who you are. Your cruelty reveals everything. You're the dread pirate Roberts, admit it.
With pride. What can I do for you?
You can die slowly, cut into 1,000 pieces.
Hardly complimentary, Your Highness. Why loose your venom on me?
You killed my love.
It's possible. I kill a lot of people. Who was this love of yours? Another prince like this one? Ugly, rich, and scabby?
No. A farm boy. Poor. Poor and perfect. With eyes like the sea after a storm.
Her mournful expression changes to a contemptuous glower.
On the high seas, your ship attacked, and the dread pirate Roberts never takes prisoners.
I can't afford to make exceptions. I mean, once word leaks out that a pirate has gone soft, people begin to disobey you, and then it's nothing but work, work, work all the time.
You mock my pain!
Life is pain, Highness. Anyone who says differently is selling something. I remember this farm boy of yours, I think. This would be what, 5 years ago? Does it bother you to hear?
Nothing you can say will upset me.
He died well. That should please you. No bribe attempts or blubbering. He simply said, please. Please, I need to live. It was the please that caught my memory. I asked him what was so important for him here. True love, he replied. And then he spoke of a girl of surpassing beauty and faithfulness. I can only assume he meant you. You should bless me for destroying him before he found out what you really are.
And what am I?
Faithfulness he talked of, madam. Your enduring faithfulness. Now tell me truly, when you found out he was gone, did you get engaged to your prince that same hour, or did you wait a whole week out of respect for the dead?
You mocked me once. Never do it again. I died that day.
The man in black spots Humperdinck's party on the plateau.
You can die too, for all I care. Oh.
She shoves him down the ravine.
As you wish.
Oh, my sweet Wesley, what have I done?
She flings herself after him. They both tumble violently, bouncing and rolling down the steep hillside. Wesley's black mask comes off in the chaos. He and Buttercup finally skid to a stop at the bottom and just lie there with their arms and legs splayed. On the plateau, Prince Humperdinck and the others look around.
They've disappeared. He must have seen us closing in, which might account for his panicking and error. Unless I'm wrong, and I'm never wrong, they are headed dead into the fire swamp.
The search party sets off. On the ravine floor, the lovers' eyes meet. Wesley drags himself over to Buttercup, wraps one arm around her slender waist, and cradles her head in the other.
Can you move at all?
Move? You're alive. If you want, I can fly.
He embraces her tightly, his sandy blonde hair tied back in a short ponytail.
I told you I would always come for you. Why didn't you wait for me?
Well, you were dead.
Death cannot stop true love. All it can do is delay it for a while.
I will never doubt again.
There will never be a need.
Their lips meet in a tender, loving kiss.
Oh, no. No, please.
What is it? What's the matter?
They're kissing again. Do we have to hear the kissing part?
Someday you may not mind so much.
Let's get under the fire swamp. That sounded good.
Oh.
He takes a sip from a mug.
You're sick, I'll humor you. So now where were we? Yeah. Oh, okay. Wesley and Buttercup raced along the ravine floor.
Ha! Your pig fiancé is too late. A few more steps and we'll be safe in the fire swamp.
We'll never survive.
Nonsense. You're only saying that because no one ever has.
Wesley and Buttercup race off into the fire swamp. Only a faint trace of sunlight makes its way down through the great trees and tangled vines into the dank quagmire. Buttercup clings to Wesley's arm as they take a few cautious steps along the marshy ground, then pause to look around in the gloomy fog.
It's not that bad.
The fair princess gives him a look of disbelief.
Well, I'm not saying I'd like to build a summer home here, but the trees are actually quite lovely.
He takes another appraising glance at the mighty tree trunks, then turns back to Buttercup and finds her dubious expression unchanged. With a rakish cock of his eyebrows, he leads her forward. They proceed up a slight incline, disappearing intermittently behind mossy vines and roots as thick as an elephant's leg. They share an unsettled look. A giant spurt of flame shoots from the ground, igniting the hem of Buttercup's dress. Wesley quickly sits her down. Gathering the folds of her dress, he deftly suffocates the fire.
Well, now, that was an adventure. Singed a bit, were you?
She shakes her head.
You.
He shakes his head, then they proceed through the swamp. He pulls her out of the way just as more fire shoots up.
Well, one thing I will say, our swamp certainly does keep you on your toes.
He undauntedly guides her forward. Later, he slashes away vines that lie draped across their path.
This will all soon be but a happy memory. It's Robert Ship Revenge. He's anchored at the far end. And I, as you know, am Robert's.
But how's that possible, since he's been marauding 20 years and you only left me 5 years ago?
I myself am often surprised at life's little quirks.
He instinctively moves Buttercup away from another fiery burst.
What I told you before about saying please was true. It intrigued Robert, as did my descriptions of your beauty. Finally, Robert's decided something. He said, all right, Wesley, never had a valet, contrived tonight. I'll most likely kill you in the morning. 3 years, he said that. Good night, Wesley. Good work. Sleep well. I'll most likely kill you in the morning. It was a fine time for me. I was learning to fence, fight, anything anyone would teach me. And Roberts and I eventually became friends. And then it happened.
What? Go on.
Roberts had grown so rich, he wanted to retire. So he took me to his cabin, told me his secret.
He picks her up and carries her across a log.
I am not the Dread Pirate Roberts, he said. My name is Ryan. I inherited the ship from the previous Dread Pirate Roberts, just as you will inherit it from me. The man I inherited from was not the real Dread Pirate Roberts either. His name was Cummerbund. The real Roberts has been retired 15 years and living like a king in Patagonia. Thank you.
Then he explained that the name was the important thing for inspiring the necessary fear. You see, no one would surrender to the Dread Pirate Wesley. So we sailed ashore, took on an entirely new crew, and he stayed aboard for a while as first mate, all the time calling me Roberts. Once the crew believed, he left the ship, and I have been Roberts ever since.
Except now that we're together, I shall retire and hand the name over to someone else. Is everything clear to you?
Buttercup nods amiably, but then yields a perplexed frown as she continues forward. She suddenly sinks, disappearing completely in a patch of sand. Moving swiftly, Wesley hacks a U-shaped vine in half, then holds on to one end as he dives after her. The sand settles quickly with the vine protruding from its still surface. A rodent the size of an alligator lumbers into view. Its wet, whiskered snout sniffs around a bit at the edge of the sand. Then the sharp-toothed creature heads off behind some trees. Wesley's arm suddenly breaks the surface. Gripping the vine, he pulls Buttercup to safety. Sandy granules cake their bodies. Wesley deposits the princess on solid ground, then collapses exhaustedly. Buttercup closes her eyes and buries her face in the dirt as she coughs. Wesley gently looks over at her, then pushes himself up and helps her move into a nook between a tree's massive roots. They cling to each other tightly. Wesley notices the rodent snarling down at them from the tree's bough. Another one stands nearby. Buttercup remains oblivious.
We'll never succeed. We may as well die here.
No. No. We have already succeeded.
He helps her to her feet.
I mean, what are the three terrors of the fire swamp? One, the flame spurt. No problem. There's a popping sound preceding each. We can avoid that. Two, the lightning sand. But you were clever enough to discover what that looks like, so in the future we can avoid that too.
Wesley, what about the ROUSs?
Rodents of unusual size? I don't think they exist.
An ROUS pounces on him. Pinned underneath a giant rodent, Wesley struggles to fend it off. It sinks its fangs into his arm. He drives a fist into the beast's face, rolling it off, then reaches for his fallen sword. The ROUS clambers back on top of him, thwarting his attempt. The rodent's tongue darts furiously as Wesley grabs its upper and lower jaws and strains to hold them apart. He barrel rolls, pulling the ROUS with him, then kicks it over his head. As he scrambles for his sword, the rodent charges at Buttercup.
Wesley!
Changing course, he grabs the ROUS by its corded tail and wrestles with it. Buttercup grabs a log off the ground and jabs at the relentless rodent. It snags the hem of her dress in its teeth, pulling her off her feet, then gnaws at her shoe. Buttercup clubs it in the skull, keeping it at bay. With its focus back on Wesley, it chomps down on his shoulder. He rolls the ROUS right into a flame spurt. With the beast on fire, Wesley gets free and makes it to his sword. The ROUS rolls around, extinguishing the flames, then starts another weakened approach for its adversary. Wesley exhaustedly stabs it in its side. He yanks his blade free from the beast's smoldering flank. The rodent of unusual size collapses on its side, legs twitching, then falls dead. His shoulder raw and bloody, Wesley turns to Buttercup, who lets out a relieved sigh. Later, they limp hand in hand out of the fire swamp and toward a body of water visible beyond a scattering of trees.
We did it.
No, is that so terrible?
Smiling at each other, they lean in for a kiss. Humperdinck and his warriors ride out in front of them. Wesley protectively raises his sword.
Surrender!
You mean wish to surrender to me? Pretty well, I accept.
I give you full marks for bravery. Don't make yourself a fool.
Ah, but how will you capture us? We know the secrets of the fire swamp. We can live there quite happily for some time, so whenever you feel like dying, feel free to visit.
I tell you once again, surrender!
Will not happen.
For the last time, surrender!
Death first!
Will you promise not to hurt him?
What was that?
What was that?
If we surrender, and I return with you, will you promise not to hurt this man?
May I live 1,000 years and never hunt again.
He is a sailor on the pirate ship Revenge. Promise to return him to his ship.
I swear it will be done.
As crossbowmen approach the couple, the prince speaks to his advisor.
Once we're out of sight, take him back to Florin and throw him in the pit of despair.
I swear it will be done.
I thought you were dead once, and it almost destroyed me. I could not bear it if you died again. Not when I could save you.
Humperdinck rides by, scooping her up onto his horse, and they gallop off. The crossbowmen keep Wesley surrounded as he watches them go. His brow hangs heavy with a heartbroken expression.
Come, sir. We must get you to your ship.
The crossbowmen march Wesley to the advisor and his detail of mounted soldiers. The swashbuckler smirks.
We are men of action. Lies do not become us.
Well spoken, sir.
He nods to one of the crossbowmen, who binds the prisoner's wrists behind his back. Wesley stares curiously at the nobleman's gloved hand.
What is it?
You have six fingers on your right hand. Someone was looking for you.
The advisor clubs him on the skull. Now, a pudgy, shaggy-haired albino in a monk's robe carries a tray of food and drink into a dank underground chamber. Candelabras and torches placed throughout the gloomy, multi-level dungeon cast weak pockets of light on desks, tables, and a sinister-looking apparatus with a spiked surface. The albino heads down a flight of stone steps to Wesley, who lies chained, shirtless, to a table. The pale newcomer wets a cloth in a small bowl, then dabs at the prisoner's healing shoulder wound. Wesley comes to, lolling his head. As he sees his wound being tended to, his eyes flash alertly and he shifts his disquieted gaze to the albino.
Where am I?
The pit of despair. Don't even think. Don't even think about trying to escape. The chains are far too thick. And don't dream of being rescued either. The only way in is secret. Only the Prince, the Count, and I know how to get in and out.
Then I'm here till I die?
Till I kill you, yeah.
He sets the bowl down on a side table, then continues dabbing at Wesley's wound with a cloth.
Then why bother curing me?
The Prince and the Count always insist on everyone being healthy before they're broken.
So it's to be torture?
The albino nods excitedly.
I can cope with torture.
The dungeon keeper shakes his pale head.
You don't believe me?
You survived the fire swamp. You must be very brave. But nobody withstands the machine.
Wesley lowers his eyes. Meanwhile, Buttercup sullenly wanders through Florin Castle. She passes right by Prince Humperdinck and the Count in an intersecting corridor without even noticing them. The two men watch her sulk off.
She's been like that ever since the fire swamp.
It's my father's failing health that's upsetting her.
Of course.
Now, firelight glows in the castle's windows.
The king died that very night. And before the following dawn, Buttercup and Humperdinck were married. And at noon she met her subjects again, this time as their queen.
My father's final words were...
Hold it, Grandpa. You read that wrong. She doesn't marry Humperdinck, she marries Wesley. She's sure of it. After all that Wesley did for her, if she didn't marry him, it wouldn't be fair.
Well, who says life is fair? Where is that written? Life isn't always fair.
I'm telling you, you're messing up the story. Now get it right.
Do you want me to go on with this?
Yes.
All right, then. No more interruptions. At noon, she met her subjects again, this time as their queen.
My father's final words were, love her as I loved her, and there will be joy. I present to you your queen, Queen Buttercup.
The crowd turns en masse to the archway glowing from within with its ethereal light. As Buttercup emerges, wearing a crown, the waves of villagers kneel before her. An old, nearly toothless hag remains standing.
Why do you do this?
Because you had love in your hands, and you gave it up.
But they would have killed Wesley if I hadn't done it.
Your true love lives, and you marry another. True love saved her in the fire swamp, and she treated it like garbage. And that's what she is, the queen of refuse. So bow down to her if you want. Bow to her. Bow to the queen of slime, the queen of filth, the queen of putrescence. Boo! Boo! Rubbish, filth, slime, muck. Boo! Boo! Boo!
Buttercup bolts awake, then hurries out of bed.
It was 10 days till the wedding. The king still lived, but Buttercup's nightmares were growing steadily worse.
See? Didn't I tell you she'd never marry that rotten Humperdinck?
Yes, you're very smart. Shut up.
In the Prince's chambers.
It comes to this. I love Wesley. I always have. I know now I always will. If you tell me I must marry you in 10 days, please believe I will be dead by morning.
Seated at his desk, Humperdinck maintains a subdued disposition. He gradually opens his mouth to speak.
I could never cause you grief. Consider our wedding off.
He turns to the Count.
You return this Wesley to his ship?
Yes.
Then we will simply alert him. Beloved, are you certain he still wants you? After all, it was you who did the leaving in the fire swamp. Not to mention that pirates are not known to be men of their words.
My Wesley will always come for me.
Humperdinck paces a bit, then faces Buttercup with open arms.
I suggest a deal. You write 4 copies of a letter. I'll send my 4 fastest ships, 1 in each direction. The dread pirate Roberts is always close to Florin this time of year. We'll run up the white flag and deliver your message. If Wesley wants you, bless you both. If not...
He steps in close to his princess bride.
Please consider me as an alternative to suicide. Are we agreed?
She nods. Later, Humperdinck and his advisor enter a grove of thick trees.
Your princess is really quite a winning creature. Trifle. Simple, perhaps, but appeal is undeniable.
Oh, no, the people are quite taken with her. It's odd. But when I hired Vizzini to have her murdered on our engagement day, I thought that was clever. But it's going to be so much more moving when I strangle her on our wedding night. Once Gilda is blamed, the nation will be truly outraged. They'll demand we go to war.
The Count looks around.
Now, where is that secret knot? It's impossible to find.
He presses a knot on a tree and a secret door swings open.
Are you coming down into the pit?
Wesley's got his strength back. I'm starting him on the machine tonight.
Tyrone, you know how much I love watching you work. But I've got my country's 500th anniversary to plan, my wedding to arrange, my wife to murder, and Gilda to frame for it. I'm swamped.
The Count steps over and earnestly takes his hand.
Get some rest. If you haven't got your health, you haven't got anything.
He smiles, then heads for the tree. Now, Wesley lies strapped to a cart as the albino rolls him to a hulking device of wheels and levers. The Count paces over from behind a desk while the dungeon keeper attaches tubes to suction cups all over the prisoner's body.
Beautiful, isn't it? Took me half a lifetime to invent it. I'm sure you've discovered my deep and abiding interest in pain. Present, I'm writing the definitive work on the subject. So I want you to be totally honest with me on how the machine makes you feel. This being our first try, I'll use the lowest setting.
He shifts a lever to position number 1 on a calibrated scale. A floodgate opens, causing water to pour down a chute to a massive paddle wheel which cranks the gears on the machine to life. Wesley convulses against his restraints. His eyes and jaw clench shut in an excruciated grimace. The albino and his boss both watch with faint, sadistic smiles. The Count switches off the machine.
As you know, the concept of the suction pump is centuries old. Well, really, that's all this is, except that instead of sucking water, I'm sucking life. I've just sucked 1 year of your life away. I might one day go as high as 5, but I really don't know what that would do to you. So let's just start with what we have. What did this do to you? Tell me. And remember, this is for posterity, so be honest. How do you feel?
Wesley cries.
Interesting.
Meanwhile, Humperdinck sits in his quarters, swamped in maps and scrolls. A man with both a dagger and a sword sheathed on his belt arrives.
Yellen.
Sire.
Humperdinck peevishly waves him over. Yellen hurries to his side and kneels, clutching the arm of his chair. Under a withering look from the prince, he quickly withdraws his hand.
As chief enforcer of all Florin, I trust you with this secret. Killers from Gilda are infiltrating the Thieves' Forest and plan to murder my bride on our wedding night.
My spy network has heard no such news.
Any word from Wesley?
Buttercup stands in the doorway.
Too soon, my angel. Patience.
He will come for me.
Of course.
As she saunters off, the two men immediately resume their conversation.
She will not be murdered. On the day of the wedding, I want the Thieves' Forest emptied and every inhabitant arrested.
Many of the thieves will resist. My regular enforcers will be inadequate.
Form a brute squad, then. I want the Thieves' Forest emptied before I wed.
It won't be easy, sir.
Try ruling the world sometime.
Now in a forest village.
Day of the wedding arrived. The brute squad had their hands full carrying out Humperdinck's orders.
As tough-looking brutes round up inhabitants, Yellen rides across a bridge at the front of a prisoner wagon.
Is everybody out?
Almost. There's a Spaniard giving us some trouble.
Will you give him some trouble? Move.
He continues on his way. Elsewhere, Inigo sprawls against a wall, surrounded by wine bottles.
I am waiting for you, Vicini. You told me to go back to the beginning. So I have. This is where I am, and this is where I'll stay. I will not be moved.
He swigs from a bottle.
Hold there!
I don't know, budge. Keep your hoda.
But the prince gave orders.
The Spaniard lashes at the brute with his sword.
Sorry, Vicini. When the job went wrong, you went back to the beginning. Well, this is where we got the job. So it's the beginning. And I am staying till Vicini comes.
You brute, come here!
I am waiting for Vicini.
You sure you are a meanie?
Two huge hands grab Inigo and pull him to his feet. In his drunken stupor, he places his own hand inside one of the giant palms for comparison.
Hello.
It's you.
Come on.
As the other brute rushes in, Fezzik punches him.
You don't look so good. You don't smell so good either.
Perhaps not. I feel fine.
Yeah.
As his friend lets him go, Inigo falls flat on his face.
Fezzik and Inigo were reunited. And as Fezzik nursed his inebriated friend back to health, he told Inigo of Vizzini's death and the existence of Count Rugen, the six-fingered man. Considering Inigo's lifelong search, he handled the news surprisingly well.
He passes out into his stew. Now Fezzik dunks his head in water buckets.
Fezzik took great care in reviving Inigo.
That's enough! That's enough! Where is this Rugen now? So I might kill him.
He's with the prince in the castle. But the castle gate... it's guarded by 30 men.
Inigo kicks a table in exasperation, then paces thoughtfully and eyes his companion.
How many could you handle?
I don't think more than 10.
The Spaniard flexes the fingers of his right hand in alternation as he does the math.
Leave in 20 for me. At my best, I could never defeat that many.
He sinks disconsolately into a wooden armchair.
I need Vicina to plan. I have no gift for strategy.
But Vincent is dead.
Not Vicini. I need the man in black.
What?
Look, he bested you with strength, your greatness. He bested me with steel. He must have outthought Vicini. And a man who can do that can plan my castle onslaught any day. Let's go.
Where?
Find the man in black, obviously.
Well, you don't know where he is.
Don't bother me with trifles. After 20 years, at last my father's soul will be at peace. There will be blood tonight!
He charges out of the thatched roof hut. Meanwhile, in his chambers, Prince Humperdinck sharpens a dagger on a stone. Yellen rushes in and kneels before his cluttered desk.
Rise and report.
The thieves' forest is emptied. 30 men guard the castle gate.
Double it. My princess must be safe.
The gate has but one key.
It's on a chain around his neck.
And I carry that.
Humperdinck sets his dagger down.
Ah, my dulcet darling.
He takes Buttercup by the hands.
Tonight, we marry. Tomorrow morning, your men will escort us to Florin Channel, where every ship in my armada waits to accompany us on our honeymoon.
Every ship but your four fastest, you mean?
The prince's smile fades into a blank expression.
Every ship but the four you sent?
Yes, of course.
Naturally not those four.
Your Majesties.
Yellen bows slightly as he takes his leave. Buttercup glowers.
You never sent the ships. Don't bother lying. Doesn't matter. Wesley will come for me anyway.
You're a silly girl.
Yes, I am a silly girl. For not having seen sooner that you were nothing but a coward with a heart full of fear.
I would not say such things if I were you.
Why not? You can't hurt me. Wesley and I are joined by the bonds of love. And you cannot track that, not with 1,000 bloodhounds. And you cannot break it, not with 1,000 swords. And when I say you are a coward, that is only because you are the slimiest weakling ever to crawl the earth.
Humperdinck grabs her roughly.
I would not say such things if I were you.
He pulls her down the corridor, puts her in her room, and locks the door. As he breaks into a run, our view cuts to the pit of despair, where the prince comes racing down the steps. He leans over Wesley, hooked up to the machine.
You truly love each other, and so you might have been truly happy. Not one couple in a century has that chance, no matter what the storybooks say. And so I think no man in a century will suffer as greatly as you will.
He shifts the lever all the way up to its highest setting.
Not to 50!
Humperdinck coldly watches Wesley suffer. Out in the grove of thick trees. At the castle, Yellen and his mob of brutes look about uneasily. Buttercup hears the sound from her room, now in a crowded marketplace.
Fezzik! Fezzik! Listen! Do you hear? That is the sound of ultimate suffering. My heart made that sound when Ruga slaughtered my father. The man in black makes it now.
The man in black?
His true love is marrying another tonight. So who else has the cause for ultimate suffering?
Excuse me. Pardon me, it's important.
Fezzik,
please.
Thank you.
The crowd parts, clearing an easy path for Inigo and Fezzik. Now the albino wheels a barrow through the grove of trees. A sword stops him.
Where is the man in black? You get that from this grove, yes? Fezzik, jog his memory.
The giant pounds him on the top of the head with his fist. The albino drops.
I'm sorry, Inigo. I didn't mean to jar him so hard. Inigo?
Inigo kneels with his sword.
Father, I have failed you for 20 years. Now our misery can end. Somewhere close by is a man who can help us. I cannot find him alone. I need you. I need you to guide my sword. Please.
He rises, his eyes closed.
Guide my sword.
He staggers through the grove of trees with his weapon held out in front of himself. Fezzik watches as his companion turns in a slow circle, keeping his eyes shut tightly. Inigo walks forward a few paces, shifts course to the left, then makes a sharp right turn as if being pulled by his sword. The blade suddenly swings back to the left and strikes a knot in a tree, halting him. He opens his eyes and frowns at the innocuous tree. Burying his face in his arm, he collapses despairingly against the knot and causes the secret door to pop open. Fezzik follows him down the staircase. Later, by the machine, the giant holds his ear to Wesley's unmoving chest. Fezzik looks at Inigo.
He's dead.
Just says no fire.
Grandpa, wait. What did Fezzik mean he's dead? I mean, he didn't mean dead. Wesley's only faking, right?
You want me to read this or not?
Who gets Humperdinck?
I don't understand.
Who kills Prince Humperdinck? At the end, somebody's got to do it. Is it Inigo? Who?
Nobody. Nobody kills him. He lives.
You mean he wins? Jesus, Grandpa, what did you read me this thing for?
You know, you've been very sick, and you're taking this story very seriously. I think we ought to stop now.
No, I'm okay. Sit down. All right.
Okay. All right, now let's see. Where were we? Oh, yes. In the pit of despair.
The two friends sulk over Wesley's body.
Well, we Montoyas have never taken defeat easily. Come along, Fezzik, bring the body.
The body?
Have you any money?
I have a little.
I just hope it's enough to buy a miracle. That's all.
Later, Inigo knocks on the door of a hovel.
Go away!
A wizened old man opens a small window in the door.
What?
Are you the Miracle Max who worked for the king all those years?
The king's thinking son fired me, and thank you so much for bringing up such a painful subject. While you're at it, why don't you give me a nice paper cut and pour lemon juice on it? We're closed!
He shuts the window. Miracle Max opens back up.
Beat it, or I'll call the Brute Squad.
I'm on the Brute Squad.
You are the Brute Squad.
We need a miracle. It's very important.
Look, I'm retired. Besides, why would you want someone the king's stinking son fired? I might kill whoever you wanted me to miracle.
He's already dead.
He is, eh? I'll take a look. Bring him in.
Later, Inigo and Fezzik lay the body down on a table inside the homey little shack. Breathing heavily, Miracle Max picks Wesley's arm up, then lets it drop limply.
I've seen worse.
He pokes around the dead man's chest.
Sir?
Huh?
We're in a terrible rush.
Don't rush me, sonny. You rush a miracle man, you get rotten miracles. You got money?
65.
I never worked for so little, except once, and that was a very noble cause.
This is noble, sir. His wife is crippled. His children are on the brink of starvation.
Now you are a rotten liar.
I need him to help avenge my father. Murdered these 20 years.
Your first story was better. Where's that bellows cram? He probably owes you money, huh? Well, I'll ask him.
He's dead. He can't talk.
Ooh, but ooh, look who knows so much, huh? Well, it just so happens that your friend here is only mostly dead. There's a big difference between mostly dead and all dead. Please open his mouth. Now, mostly dead, he's slightly alive. Now, all dead... Well, with all dead, there's usually only one thing that you can do.
What's that?
Go through his clothes and look for loose change.
The bushy-browed miracle worker pumps a bellows in Wesley's mouth, then leans in close to him.
Hey! Hello in there! Hey! What's so important? What you got here, that's worth living for.
He presses the dead man's chest, pushing the air out past his lips.
True love. True love. You heard him? You could not ask for a more noble cause than that.
Yeah, sonny, true love is the greatest thing in the world. Except for a nice MLT, a mutton, lettuce, and tomato sandwich when the mutton is nice and lean and the tomato is ripe. They're so perky. I love that. But that's not what he said. He distinctly said to blave. And as we all know, to blave means to bluff. Huh? So you're probably playing cards and he cheated.
Liar!
An old crone storms in.
Liar!
Get back, witch!
I'm not a witch, I'm your wife! But after what you just said, I'm not even sure I want to be that anymore!
You never had it so good.
True love, he said true love, Max!
Don't say my another God. Word, Valerie!
He's afraid. Ever since Prince Humperdinck fired him, his confidence is shattered.
Why'd you say that name? You promised me that you would never say that name!
What, Humperdinck?
Ah!
Humperdinck!
He covers his ears as she chases him around the room.
I'm not listening! Love lies expiring, and you don't have the decency to say why you won't help.
Nobody's hearing nothing.
Humperdinck!
This is Buttercup's true love. If you heal him, he will stop Humperdinck's wedding. Shut up!
Wait. I make him bear the Humperdinck suffers?
Humiliations galore.
I did a lick, Baldanisha. That is a noble cause. Give me the 65. I'm on the job.
Hello.
Now, a brush coats a leathery wad with a dark, melted substance.
That's a miracle pill.
The chocolate coating makes it go down easier, but you have to wait 15 minutes for full potency. And you shouldn't go in swimming after for at least,
An hour.
Yeah, an hour.
A good hour. Yeah.
Thank you for everything.
Okay.
Bye-bye, boys.
Have fun storming the castle.
Think it'll work?
It would take a miracle.
Bye-bye.
Now, Wesley's hunched body lies sandwiched between Fezzik and Inigo as they sneak across the top of the castle's outer parapet wall. The giant looks down at scores of brutes standing guard outside the main gate.
Inigo, it's more than 30.
What's the difference?
He props up Wesley's head.
We've got him.
As he lets go, it falls limp.
Help me here.
We'll have to force feed him.
Has it been 15 minutes?
We can't wait. Running is in half an hour. We must strike in the hustle and the bustle beforehand. Tilt his head back. Open his mouth.
Inigo gives the miracle pill a kiss before stuffing it down Wesley's throat.
How long do we have to wait before if we know the miracle works?
Your guess is as good as mine. I'll beat you apart. I'll take you both together.
I guess not very long.
The revived man frowns at Inigo.
Why won't my arms move?
You've been mostly dead all day.
We have Miracle Max. Make a pill to bring you back.
Who are you? Are we enemies? Why am I on this wall? Where's Buttercup?
Let me explain. No, there is too much. Let me sum up. Buttercup is marrying Humperdinck in a little less than half an hour. So all we have to do is get in, break up the wedding, steal the princess, make our escape. After I kill Count Rugen.
That doesn't leave much time for dilly-dally.
You just wiggle your finger. That's wonderful.
I've always been a quick eater. What are our liabilities?
There is but one working castle gate.
Fezzik helps him raise the half-dead pirate to a crenel. Wesley's head lolls back for a look.
And it is guarded by 60 men.
And our assets?
Your brains. Fez's strength. My steel.
That's it? Impossible. If I had a month to plan, maybe I could come up with something but this.
You just shook your head. That doesn't make you happy.
With effort, he turns his floppy head to gaze upon Fezzik.
My brains, his steel, and your strength against 60 men, and you think a little head jiggle is supposed to make me happy? I mean, if we only had a wheelbarrow, that would be something.
Where do we put the wheelbarrow of the albino head?
Over the albino, I think.
Why didn't you list that among our assets in the first place? What I wouldn't give for a Holocaust cloak.
There we cannot help you.
The giant pulls one out.
What did this do?
How did you get that?
At Miracle Max's. It fits so nice as I could keep it.
All right. Come on, help me out.
As they move Wesley, his head keeps going limp.
Now I'll need a sword eventually.
Why? You can't even lift one.
True, but that's hardly common knowledge, is it?
Fezzik keeps resetting it.
No. There may be problems once we're inside.
I'll say. How do I find the Count? Once I do, how do I find you again? Once I find you again, how do we escape?
Don't pester. He's had a hard day.
Right. Sorry.
The giant nods Wesley's head. The three of them continue along the wall.
Inigo.
What?
I hope we win.
You don't seem excited, my little muffin.
With Buttercup.
Should I be?
Brides often are, I'm told.
I do not marry tonight. My Wesley will save me.
She marches out in her bridal gown. Humperdinck smiles to himself as he follows. Now, the heads of Fezzik, Wesley, and Inigo rise up from behind the wall. They spy down on the castle's portcullis, guarded by Yellen and his 60 brutes, then all share a resolute look. Inigo holds out his hand, and Fezzik places his on top. Rocking back and forth, the still somewhat dead Wesley manages to catapult his on top of theirs. Meanwhile, in a chapel, lit by hundreds of candles, guests and pews all look toward Buttercup and Humperdinck kneeling at the altar beside the king. An impressive, pasty-faced clergyman in full regalia turns around to face them, motions for everyone to rise, then gazes out upon his congregation with a solemn expression.
Marriage is what brings us together today. Marriage, that blessed arrangement, that dream within a dream.
Stand your ground, men! Stand your ground!
Outside, a cloaked, floating giant pushes through the gates in the outer wall.
Stand your ground!
And the Dread Pirate Roberts. There will be no survivor.
No, not yet.
My men are here. I am here. But soon you will not be here.
No!
Light him.
Wheeling Fezzik in the barrow, Inigo ignites his cloak.
The great power dwarves takes no survivors. All you war's nightmares are about to come true.
Meanwhile,
then run.
The prince nods to Count Rugen, who exits with some guards.
We'll follow you forever.
The great pirate Robert is here for you.
The brutes run away.
Stay where you are! And don't fight! Stay where you are!
Yellen finds himself alone to face the flaming giant back inside the chapel.
So treasure, your one.
Skip to the end.
Have you the ring?
The prince puts it on his bride's finger.
Here comes my Wesley now.
Fezzik, the portcullis!
Flinging his cloak aside, the giant grabs a closing gate and hefts it back upward in the chapel.
Your Wesley is dead. I killed him myself.
Then why is there fear behind your eyes?
Outside, Inigo drags Wesley after Fezzik as they corner Yellen in an alcove.
Give us the gate key.
I have no gate key.
Fezzik?
Tear his arms off.
Oh, you mean this gate key?
He whips it out.
Under you, Princess Bahwa.
Man and wife! Say man and wife!
Man and wife.
Escort the bride to the honeymoon suite. I'll be there shortly.
He throws his bride to the king and dashes off.
He didn't come.
The feeble monarch leads the dazed princess out. Meanwhile, Count Rugen and a quartet of warriors race through the castle past tapestries and braziers. Elsewhere, the three infiltrators find their way through the labyrinth of corridors with Fezzik one-handedly supporting Wesley, who drags a sword behind him. Halting them, Inigo peers around a corner and finds their path clear. Wesley's head lolls, prompting them to proceed toward a stained glass window. Count Rugen and his warriors suddenly cut them off. Inigo fearlessly stares them down, his sword still lowered.
Kill the Dark One and the giant, but leave the third for questioning.
His four warriors attack. With only a few quick fencing moves, Inigo instantly defeats each one the moment he arrives, then squares off with Count Rugen.
Hello. My name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father. Prepare to die.
He stands on guard. Rugen twists his sword to a ready position. He abruptly turns tail and runs off down the corridor. As Inigo takes off after him, Fezzik and the limp-necked Wesley exchange a look. Count Rugen runs through a wooden door and shuts it. Arriving a moment too late, Inigo throws himself against it over and over.
Fezzik! I need you!
I can't leave him alone.
He's getting away from me, Fezzik! Please! Fezzik!
The giant props Wesley against a suit of armor.
Why not?
He turns the corner to find Inigo launching the full force of his body into the door. Fezzik stops him, then knocks it off its hinges with one blow.
Thank you.
Elsewhere in the castle.
Strange wedding.
Yes, a very strange wedding. Come along.
As the queen moves on ahead, Buttercup gently stops the king and plants a kiss on his cheek. He smiles.
What was that for?
Because you've always been so kind to me. And I won't be seeing you again, since I'm killing myself once we reach the honeymoon suite.
Wouldn't that be nice, hmm? She kissed me!
Now, Rugen dashes down narrow corridors with Inigo in hot pursuit, then flees through a wooden door. Reaching it a few paces later, the Spaniard shoulders his way through. Meanwhile, Fezzik returns to the suit of armor. The dead warriors remain sprawled on the floor, but Wesley is nowhere to be seen. Fezzik looks around at all the possible directions he could have gone. The chase continues through a torchlit pantry stocked with hay bales and baskets of apples. Heading down a curved staircase, Rugen pauses to draw a dagger from his leather boot. He leads his pursuer into a dining hall, then turns back and flings the blade. It hits Inigo in the stomach. As he staggers back against the wall, clutching his wound, Rugen gives a satisfied sneer.
Sorry, Father. I tried.
The Count strides closer.
You must be that little Spanish brat I taught a lesson to all those years ago. Simply incredible. If you've been chasing me your whole life only to fail now,
I think that's the worst thing I've ever heard. How marvelous.
Inigo sinks to the floor. Meanwhile, Buttercup enters the honeymoon suite and crosses to a table. She takes a seat, still clad in her bridal gown and sparkly floral tiara, her long blonde hair braided in loose curls. With her face set in a melancholy expression, she opens a hinged, decorative wooden box to reveal a dagger with a notched hilt nearly as long as the blade. She takes it out with both hands and studies it in her gentle grip. Closing her eyes, she presses the tip of the blade to her bosom and draws in a deep breath.
There's a shortage of perfect breasts in this world. 'Twould be a pity to damage yours.
Wesley! Oh, Wesley, darling!
Finding him on the bed, she smothers him with kisses.
Wesley, why won't you hold me?
Gently.
At a time like this, that's all you can think to say. Gently.
Gently!
She lets go of his head, and it bangs on the headboard. Meanwhile, Inigo pulls the dagger from his belly. Count Rugen watches calmly as he struggles to his feet, holding the wound with one hand and his sword with the other.
Good heavens. Are you still trying to win?
Inigo takes a step forward, then stumbles back.
You've got an overdeveloped sense of vengeance. It's going to get you into trouble someday.
Rugen thrusts his sword at his enemy's heart. Inigo weakly parries it into his left shoulder. Rugen lunges again. Inigo fends the blade off to his right arm. As the count strikes a third time, his foe deflects with renewed strength.
Hello. My name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father. Prepare to die.
Advancing on the count, he falters heavily against a banquet table. Rugen attacks, but each of his strikes gets thwarted.
Hello. My name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father. Prepare to die.
Inigo fends off the count's attack and sends him spinning into a candelabra.
Hello! My name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father. Prepare to die.
Stop saying that!
Inigo thrusts his blade into Rugen's left shoulder, then his right arm.
Hello! My name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father. Prepare to die!
Now! Offer me money.
Yes.
Power to promise me that.
All that I have and more. Please.
Offer me everything I ask for.
Anything you want.
The Spaniard stabs him in the chest.
I want my father back, you son of a bitch.
He plunges his blade deeper, then kicks Rugen into a serving table. The count falls dead. His own wounds seeping with blood, Inigo turns and staggers out of the room. Back in the honeymoon suite, Buttercup hovers over her beloved.
Oh, Wesley, will you ever forgive me?
What hideous sin have you committed lately?
I got married. I didn't want to. It all happened so fast.
Never happened.
What?
Never happened.
But it did. I was there. This old man said man and wife.
Did you say I do?
Oh, no. Sort of skipped that part.
Then you're not married. You didn't say it. You didn't do it. Wouldn't you agree, Your Highness?
Humperdinck stands nearby.
Technicality that will shortly be remedied. But first things first.
He draws his sword and throws down the scabbard.
To the death.
No! To the pain.
Humperdinck stops in his tracks.
I don't think I'm quite familiar with that phrase.
I'll explain, and I'll use small words so that you'll be sure to understand, you warthog-faced buffoon.
That may be the first time in my life a man has dared insult me.
It won't be the last. To the pain means the first thing you lose will be your feet below the ankles. Then your hands at the wrists. Next, your nose.
And then my tongue, I suppose. I killed you too quickly the last time. A mistake I don't mean to duplicate tonight.
I wasn't finished. The next thing you lose will be your left eye, followed by your right.
And then my ears, I understand. Let's get on with it.
Wrong! Your ears you keep, and I'll tell you why. So that every shriek of every child at seeing your hideousness will be yours to cherish. Every babe that weeps at your approach, every woman who cries out, "Dear God, what is that thing?" will echo in your perfect ears. That is what to the pain means. It means I leave you in anguish, wallowing in freakish misery forever.
The prince stares at him uncertainly.
I think you're bluffing.
It's possible, pig.
I might be bluffing. It's conceivable, you miserable, vomitous mass, that I'm only lying here because I lack the strength to stand. But then again, perhaps I have the strength after all.
Wesley remains frozen for a moment, then slowly begins to move. As he stands up from the bed, leaving Buttercup's side, Humperdinck stares at him through wide eyes. From the prince's perspective, we see Wesley stand on guard and point his sword directly at us.
Drop your sword.
Humperdinck does as he's told.
Have a seat.
The prince gathers the folds of his tunic and hurriedly sits down in a chair.
Time up.
Buttercup sets to work.
Make it as tight as you like.
Oh!
Inigo enters.
Where's Fezzik?
I thought he was with you.
No.
In that case...
Wesley loses his balance.
Help him.
Why does Wesley need helping?
Because he has no strength.
I knew it. I knew you were bluffing. I knew he was bluffing.
Shall I dispatch him for you?
Thank you, but no. Whatever happens to us, I want him to live a long life alone with his cowardice.
Inigo! Inigo! Where are you?
They open a window.
Ah, there you are. Inigo, I saw the prince's table, and there they were, four white horses. And I thought, there are four of us, if we ever find a lady. Hello, lady.
Buttercup waves.
So I took them with me, in case we ever bumped into each other. And I guess we just did.
Fezzik, you did something right.
No way. I wanted it to go to my head.
He and Inigo share a smile. The princess bride climbs up on the windowsill and jumps. Her white gown billows exquisitely as she floats downward from the nighttime sky, seemingly in slow motion. Fezzik catches her in his arms. Wesley gestures graciously for Inigo to go next.
You know, it's very strange. I have been in the revenge business so long. Now that it's over, I don't know what to do with the rest of my life.
Have you ever considered piracy? You'd make a wonderful Dread Pirate Roberts.
He pats his friend on the shoulder. Inigo lifts his brow as he considers. Later, the party rides off on their four white horses. They head outside the castle gates into the misty night.
They rode to freedom. And as dawn arose, Wesley and Buttercup knew they were safe. A wave of love swept over them. And as they reached for each other...
The grandfather shuts his book.
What? What?
Nice kissing again. You don't want to hear that.
I don't mind so much.
Okay.
He continues reading.
Since the invention of the kiss, there have been five kisses that were rated the most passionate, the most pure. This one left them all behind.
Under a cloud-filled dawn sky, Buttercup and Wesley share a deep, passionate kiss.
The end.
As he shuts the book once more, his grandson smiles.
Now I think you ought to go to sleep.
Okay.
The grandfather stands and collects his hat.
Okay. Okay.
He throws on a sport coat over his cardigan.
Okay. All right.
He checks his pockets, then waves goodbye to his grandson.
So long.
The boy watches him head to the door.
Grandpa?
The old man stops and turns back to him.
Maybe you could come over and read it again to me tomorrow.
As you wish.
Lying back on his pillows, the kid blinks at him with a twinkle in his eye. His grandfather returns a warm, loving smile, then retrieves his overcoat from a hook, turns off the lights, and heads out the door. The dark bedroom fades to black. Now, credits appear over scenes from the movie. Directed by Rob Reiner. Wesley chops wood on Buttercup's farm. Screenplay by William Goldman, based upon his book. The silhouettes of Wesley and Buttercup kiss in the red glow of dusk. Produced by Andrew Scheinman and Rob Reiner. Wesley sets off from Buttercup's farm. Executive producer Norman Lear. The Man in Black sword fights, starring Cary Elwes as Wesley. The Spaniard defeats four of Count Rugen's warriors. Mandy Patinkin is Inigo Montoya. Humperdinck sniffs the Iocane tube. Chris Sarandon is Prince Humperdinck. His advisor turns tail and runs. Christopher Guest is Count Rugen. The bald, diminutive kidnapper laughs hysterically, then falls over dead. Wallace Shawn as Vizzini. The giant knocks a door off its hinges and brandishes a rock. Andre the giant is Fezzik. The kid eats lunch in bed. Fred Savage is the grandson. The villagers bow before Buttercup, and introducing Robin Wright as the Princess Bride. The old man puts on his glasses and reads from the book. Special appearances by Peter Falk as the grandfather. The clergyman presides over the wedding. Peter Cook is the impressive clergyman. Fezzik pounds the dungeon keeper on the top of the head. Mel Smith is the albino. The old crone storms over to Miracle Max. Carol Kane is Valerie. Her husband pumps the bellows. And Billy Crystal is Miracle Max. Wesley, Buttercup, Inigo, and Fezzik ride off on their white horses. Valerie and Miracle Max wave goodbye. Music by Mark Knopfler. Director of Photography, Adrian Biddle. Production designed by Norman Garwood. Film editor, Robert Layton. Associate producers, Jeffrey Stott and Steve Nicolades. Casting, Jen Jenkins, CSA, and Janet Hershenson, CSA. Costume designer, Phyllis Dalton. Featured players, Anne Dyson is the Queen. Marjorie Mason is the Ancient Booer. Malcolm Story is Yellen. Willoughby Gray is the King. Betsy Brantley is the Mother. Paul Badger is the Assistant Brute. Executive in charge of production, Mark E. Pollock. UK production manager, David Barron. Assistant directors, Ken Baker, Peter Bennett. Camera operator, Sean O'Dell. Sound mixer, David John. Supervising art director, Keith Payne. Script supervisor, Sari Evans. Production accountant, John Beharrell. Location manager, Paul Sharesby. Assistant location manager, Bob Jordan. Unit manager, Derbyshire, Loretta Orderwer. Makeup supervisor, Lois Burwell. Supervising hairdresser, Ethne Fennell. Assistant costume designer, Jane Hamilton. Wardrobe supervisors, Joyce Stoneman, Richard Poynting. Art director, Richard Holland. Set decorator, Maggie Gray. Associate editor, Adam Weiss. Assistant editors, Paul Hodgson, Steve Nevius, Andrew McRitchie. Unit publicist, Jennifer Collins-Smith. Unit stillsman, Clive Coote. Music performed by Mark Knopfler, Guy Fletcher. Storybook Love, written and sung by Willie DeVille. Take Me Out to the Ball Game. Music by Albert Von Tilzer. Words by Jack Norworth. Original soundtrack recording available on Warner Brothers Records in the USA and on Polygram Records throughout the rest of the world. Read the Del Rey book. Special thanks to Martin Schaefer and Alan Horn. Filmed at Lee International Studios, Shepperton, and on location in England and in the Republic of Ireland. Copyright 1987 by The Princess Bride Limited. All rights reserved. The events, characters, and firms depicted in this photoplay are fictitious. Any similarity to actual persons, living or dead, or to actual events or firms is purely coincidental. Ownership of this motion picture is protected by copyright and other applicable laws, and any unauthorized duplication, distribution, or exhibition of this motion picture could result in criminal prosecution as well as civil liability. This Solo DX track was produced by Hollywood Access Services, copyright 2012, Hollywood Access Services, LLC, described by Justin Soule, read by Kathleen Emerson. Visit us at solo-dx.com. A Buttercup Films Limited Picture, released by 20th Century Fox Film Corporation.